Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. This week, Starbucks kosher. Many of you travel, you go to work, or you may actually have it where you live. Are you allowed to have a coffee there? What can you have? If you look on their menu, they could have 50 different items. Is all of it kosher, some of it kosher, or none of it kosher? 7-Eleven, can you have a coffee there? What about a Slurpee? What about a gas station? You're going to visit your in-laws. It's a long drive. You need that caffeine. You go into the Exxon. Can you have a coffee? These seemingly innocuous shilas, anybody who learned Yeridaya knows that they're a little more complicated than that. So we went for the best. We got from the CRC, Rav Shalom Fishbein. He's certainly one of the top few mumchim of kashrus in America. He's the president of the Association of Kashrus Organizations. They recognize his expertise. Here's one interesting clip that he said.
I remember I once spoke in Lakewood. I was astounded. I was really astounded. If there's one place in the world that I thought they would... they wouldn't be looking for. Yeah, I found two things in life that you don't mess with people. One is their bourbon, and one is their coffee. The other is their coffee. I was astounded how passionate people were arguing why they should be able to buy Frappuccino, Dizzle, you know, whatever the fancy stuff over there is, and these are people that learn Torah all day. I wasn't ready for that,
We're going to have from the OU, because no conversation about kashrus can leave out the OU, the mother of all kashrus organizations in the world. We're going to have the rabbinic supervisor, Rabbi Eli Gersten, a Talmud Chacham, Mumcha, and certainly an expert in Hilchos Kashrus. A lively debate with him should make for a fascinating hour of Torah. Rabbeisai, what are your thoughts? 732-806-8700. Press number 2. That's for what the B'nai HaYeshiva have to say. Or info@headlinesbook.com. We will post both messages, voicemails, as well as written, unless you request otherwise. But we're interested in what the Olam has to say. Now for a word from our sponsor. Headlines started something new this week until Pesach. DafHeadlines.com. And what is it? It's also on All Daf. It's 5 minutes every morning, some interesting halacha from the Daf. Something debatable, maybe a little controversial, maybe something to discuss with your friend. And part of it, after that, it's 5 minutes, it's divided to that, and something like a vart of chizuk. I don't know about you, but I could always use a little chizuk. Life is a handful. Energize your day with something divrei elokim chayim, some plasma to get your day going. If you go to dafheadlines.com, you could sign up. You could either get it by WhatsApp, by text, by email, whole assortment of ways, or you could always get it on the OU site on All Daf. Before we go to our guests, I like to say something on the parsha. This time I want to speak about Shoivavim. Shoivavim is an acronym for Shmois for Eira Boi B'Shalach Yisrei Mishpatim. The Chassidim, it's a very big thing. It is brought, by the way, first from the Talmidim of the Trumas Hadeshin, so we're going back to the 1300s. It's brought in the Kisvei Ari. The Magen Avram in Tofresh Behe brings that Misanim every Yom Hei, every Thursday of Shoivavim. So it's not just a Chassidish thing, it's a Litvish thing too. The Chassidim make it a big thing because the Arizal says it's about Zerol of Atala, so for them it's a holy thing. I want to say something about Shoivavim that really speaks to the rest of us. And by the way, I once heard from a Moshe Shapiro, who, I don't know if he considered me his Rebbe, but I consider myself a Talmud of his. He used to say this is really badly misunderstood when the Zohar HaKadosh, etc., talks about Inyanim like Shofar Zera Lavatala. And let me share with you a thought. Eile Shmois B'nei Yisrael Haboim Mitzrayma. They're coming? They're not coming. Haboim Mitzrayma. This was written 3,500 years ago, this occurred. So what's the Lashon Hoiva of Haboim Mitzrayma? So let me share with you something powerful. History, some say, stands for his story, something that happened in the past. It's ancient. Reading about the Magna Carta, remember how we used to fall asleep in school when they spoke about things like this? American Revolution had guns, was a little more exciting. But most of history is somewhat boring. What is Haboyim Mitzrayma? These parshas, Shoivavim tells us, it's not history. It's really the story of Geula. Me'afela l'oira, mishibud l'gula. And it's not a story of 3,500 years ago. Don't you have things in your life that a little bit afela you would like to bring l'oira? Don't you have some shibud, some type of an enslavement, some type, it could be, you know, pain, addiction, sorrow that doesn't go away? So these are the stories of Geula. And Haboyim Mitzrayimah means, Mitzrayim means a constricted place. We like to have freedom. Nobody likes to be in a tight spot. Eilish Shmois Ben Israel Haboyim today. Right now, 2021, January and February, you have some tzara that needs help. And where does it start with? It starts with Vayaka Melech Chadash. Something's changed. A new boss. Maybe there's new legislation that's affecting your business. New rules. Maybe a new relationship that you're struggling with. And what is it? Vayimoru es chayeyem b'avoyda kasha. Things get tough. You know, you're learning the same amount of time. You're just not getting it. It's a masechta. You never really wanted to learn mikvayos, but that's what the chabur is doing. Maybe profits are dropping. Pay drops. Maybe you lost funding for your tzedakah, your kol. Maybe you were fired. But you moru es chayeyem b'avoyda kasha. Things are really tough. It's hard to get out of bed in the morning. It's depressing. That big black dog, the black clouds are coming down. And what does the Torah say? It all starts with, Vayelech ish mi beis levi, vayikach es bas levi. There's some hope. Something is born. Could be Moshe. It'll take us out of our afela. It's an idea. Could be a person, somebody we met who could have a positive influence. And it gives us the ideas, but the idea's lost to us. We don't think we could accomplish it. And then what happens in this week's parsha? Vatishlach es hamasa. She tries to reach for something that's beyond her grasp. But her whole heart is in it, and her faith, and she believes. And suddenly, our reach just can exceed anything we ever could have imagined, way beyond our grasp. That's the beginning of Geula. But then afterwards, it gets much more murky than that. What happens? You start to doubt. Mi anoichi ki eilech el parei. And again, ma'oimer aleim, lo'ish dvarim anoichi. And sometimes you have to arouse your anger, courage, outrage. V'yichar af Hashem b'Moshe. Tkotzke famously said, the anger that the Rabbeinu Shalom had inspired Moshe. Thing he would never do. You know, a little bit of outrage, a little bit of anger could really inspire us. And what happens? We start to, in our darkness, we start to hear the Dvar Hashem. B'ni b'chayri Yisrael. I was really brought here for a purpose. My life has meaning. I'm not an accident. Everything. Kol Mada Avid Rachma, everything that comes, Rabbeinu Shalom is an Asa Oise V'yase L'chol Amaisim. I'm here for a purpose. And then what happens? We go negotiate with Parei. And what does Parei represent? They say Ha'oiref. Parei is that insurmountable, difficult thing that we just can't get. And we thought we were inspired, and we thought we reached out hands, but it's not easy. And it gets worse. Tevin Enitin Lavdecha. And we have to chazak v'yamiz lebecha v'chazik al Hashem. V'yashev Moshe al Hashem. And Moshe heard that a lot of times the Rabbeinu Shalom wants to help us, but it doesn't happen quickly. Like the Avis, Chaval al da'avdin, they waited and they waited. They never saw the Geula. Moshe said, no, I want Geula now. So in each of these parshas, and we can go on and on and on, Shoivavim tells us the parshas aren't telling us a history. It's not his story. Shoivavim is telling you these parshas are your story. And these parshas are replete with messages that in our current afela, could be business, could be in a relationship, could be in our learning, could be in politically, in our neighborhoods, in our whatever it may be, in shidduchim, there's something here to help you, to help take it, you out. So what's the message of Shoivavim? Eila b'nei Yisrael, Eila shmois b'habayim, it's from our story. And Ramesh once told me, he said, when we talk about Zerah Levatala, he said, it's not ayin tachas ayin. The Chazal talk in metaphors. What's the metaphor? All Zerah was meant to become something amazing, a human being, the greatest thing that could be. Levatala means when we have a potential that we hasn't come alive in us. We know we're better than that. We know we're bigger than that. We know we could do more. He used to say, an Eloi, when somebody's an Eloi at 70, that's Zerah Levatala. Shoivavim is the time to be Mesakein. What does that mean? Those fears that we have, the Torah tells us here in these six parashas how to beat those fears, how to achieve, how to move past the single biggest inhibitor of us becoming who we were supposed to be, fear, setback, mitzarim. So Elu Shmoyis B'nai Yisrael Haboyim Mitzrayim. These are my story. It's your story. Let's take the chizuk from these parashas to put those roadblocks behind us. I'll leave you one last thought, like how Shoivavim, another message. We're coming up to the story next week of matzah. Bye. What's the story of matzah? We have all kinds of fancy concoctions. Seven-layer cake, brioche, sticky buns, pick your favorite pastry, carbohydrate. What is matzah? It's the simplest thing. It goes back to the beginning. All things start with flour and water, and then we add in oil, and we add on this, and we add in sugar, and we add in eggs, and we add on all kinds of fruits and cherries. But it all starts when you're feeling a little bit set back. Can you roll out the old you? Do you remember the you who thought you could accomplish anything? All that energy, full of, you weren't yet depleted, you weren't cynical yet. What's the story of matzah? Someplace in all of us, there is the young us. Can you trot out that old you, that young you from so many years ago, and look at that problem again and say, when I was 22, what would have I done? How would have I attacked this? So all these parshas are full of chizuk. They're all meant to take us to the next step where we want to go. And now for the riddle of the week. Vayelech ish mi beis Levi, vayikach es bas Levi. So Rashi says, Pirush hu mimena, Amram separated from Yecheved because of Gzeiras Parai. He said, who wants to bring children into such a terrible world? And then his daughter came along and she said, Gzeirascha kasha mishal Parai. Parai was only Gezer on the Scharim, v'ata gamal on the Kevais. And he took her back, and what happened? And she regained her youth. Now, how old was Yecheved when this happened? Rashi says she was 130 years old. 130, Sarah was an amazing ness when she had a baby in her 90s, right? She's 30-some-odd years older than Sarah. There's no way Yecheved was supposed to have a child. And additionally, Rashi says, and when he took her back, her youth came back. Her narus came back. She became young again, which means until then she wasn't. So the question is, what was Miriam saying? Your gzeir is worse because he was only gzeir on the scharim, and your gzeir on the scharim and in a kevais. That's not true. There was no way, al pi derech hateva, that Yecheved could have had children. So the Rashi is soiser himself mineu bei. That is the riddle of the week. Why did Miriam ask Amram to remarry Yecheved when al pi teva there was no way at 130 that she could have children? As always, if you'd like to send in a comment, 732-806-8700. And for comments, it's 2. Or you can email us info@headlinesbook.com. We do put up the comments and the letters online where readers or listeners can access them unless you request otherwise. Let's go to our wonderful guests. So we have with us the head of Kashrus for the CRC. The CRC is the largest Chicago Rabbinical Council. It's the largest regional Orthodox organization in North America. And today we have Reb Shalom Fishbein, who's the head of Kashrus for the Chicago Rabbinical Council. Before that, he was with the OU. Welcome, Rabbi Fishbein. So the question is, can somebody walk into Starbucks? And let's start, I know they make a dazzling myriad of drinks, but let's start with the simple ones. Can you order a coffee at Starbucks?
Well, that is the most commonly ordered, but not necessarily the simplest. I want to first establish the word Starbucks, meaning we have determined that there are two types of Starbucks. There are the standalone stores that you walk into. That's the regular Starbucks. And then there's something what we call a kiosk. A kiosk is what you'll find many times on the road, like you referenced before, or in the airports, where they're actually not even owned by Starbucks, but they are somewhat of a franchise. And those kiosks are much simpler. And the most important naftamina between the two is if they heat up hot tray food. So When you walk into a place, the first thing you want to determine, is this a kiosk or is it not a kiosk? And the way you ask is, do you heat up? Do you have an oven here? Do you heat up food? And so in a kiosk, then you can certainly order a coffee and much, much more, because all of the shilas that come into Starbucks, which we'll get into, do not apply because it's just coffee, and the various non-certified things that they may wash in the sinks over there won't affect the coffee. But if you're talking about a regular Starbucks where you there are heating up food, which, by the way, even I found that in the airports they were always kiosk status, and I'm starting to see. I did a quick walkthrough of O'Hare recently and other places where I have found that indeed even the airport places are becoming like regular Starbucks stores, heating up food, using the dishwashers, the whole bit. So the kiosk is declining, and everything is becoming more and more of a regular store. So getting brewed coffee, well, it's a Shiloh. It's a Shiloh. Why? Because there's something called a brew basket. A brew basket is the basket that holds the coffee rinds, which the hot water runs through. And if that brew basket is washed together with the kaolin, that is the kaolin just had hot hams. We're talking about Isurei D'Oraisa. This isn't, you know, the Rabbanans here. These are Isurei D'Oraisa, that's Mavliya. There's a Shiloh. Basically, the way you make coffee is you put the coffee grinds into the brew basket, hot water drips through it, and on the bottom of that is a filter, and you get your coffee. The problem with plain coffee is that this brew basket is put into, one of two ways of cleaning, similar ways, but let's go to the more simply to understand way, into a dishwasher that has in it, the tongs or the plates that just used for hot Isurei D'Oraisa. And now you get a hot water of about 180 degrees, Urim Lekirishin at least.
Kedei Klipa.
Which is Mavliya Kedei Klipa. You know, there's an argument to be said, maybe it's a little bit more than that because the whole chamber becomes hot. Maybe it's a little more, but the higher, it's not long enough in there to more than Kedei Klipa, where the bleus of hot water transferred Tom from one point to the other. And now your brew basket has in it bleus of ham, mamish. That, therefore, when you put it back into your brew basket to cook cook coffee, so the hot water that's dripping onto it is also Mavliya Kedei Klipa, and it can come out into your coffee. That's the simple way of looking at it. And therefore, there are those that want to be macher and say, I'm not interested in such a thing. An argument could be made. Maybe a brew basket could be considered cliche-y, possibly, because you don't have tfanas mechamamais, or maybe that there's somewhat of the coffee grinds acts as a buffer. You know, there's makaris and halachas both way, but the simple understanding of it is that there is bleus transferring and bleus coming out when you're making your coffee. And again, I want to be clear. Can we talk in learning and say b'di'evad it's mutter? Yes. Is this the chatchila, the way of drinking coffee? In other words, is there an alternative in Starbucks that one can get that doesn't have these shilas? There are. It's called an Americano. An Americano is a coffee. It's just made slightly different, that you use an espresso concentrate, add the hot water to get it to the full strength of regular coffee. It doesn't use the brew basket. It uses something called the espresso bar, which is a built-in place machine that almost nothing besides maybe the shot divider goes through any type of cleaning device together with trafe. And you have mamish in the same place with almost an identical cup of coffee, where one had shilas and one didn't have shilas.
Now, if you wanted to, if people who do want the drip process, mm-hmm. when you say you want it, what, how would you, I mean, I would go, I would like to hear your opinion, but I would, I mean, I could think of four or five different buses to, you know, be smach. And you have the, it's washed in with detergent, which is a nice and tam. The amount of water in the dishwasher is probably 1,000 times the amount of the grease. The ham itself is a nice and tam of gam and coffee. I don't think anybody wants a tam of...
I'm not sure that's there's actually a ham coffee flavor made.
Yeah, but I think most people don't want... I mean, there's probably a chipotle-flavored coffee, too, but I would think most people would agree that they don't want to hear... I don't know about you, but I like my coffee. Maybe tack a person who wants it, but would you agree that for most people, a ham-flavored coffee would be a nice and tam lufgam? So when you add all these together, so you have a... The bleus is most Rishonim is a drabanan, right? Then you have nice and tam lufgam is a drabanan. Then or could be mutta. Then you have bittel. You have a double nice and tam lufgam. I mean, it would be a real to me. It sounds like a you have many different ways to be. You know, there's four. I just mentioned four different ways to be makel here.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's try to go through some of those. The soap is for the sanitizer. It's called the Hobart. It doesn't use soap. It just uses sanitizer, which I heard from Abelsky. It's not considered a poignum. There is one part earlier in the three compartment sink, which they do use soap, which they only use soap in the first of the three compartments. The second one is just plain hot water without soap. And, you know, if you were trying to perhaps argue that the soap in the first compartment went into the metal and therefore made everything pogum, so that the accepted way in the kashrus world is to follow the Chazanish, that unless it is at a temperature of kedei resicha, that we know that it pushes in no matter what, you know, the bleus transfer back and forth, then you would have a nice time of comp, which you do not have in the case of Starbucks. Nice time, Kedei Resicha, as we know, is at 212, and Hascholas Resicha is at 190. So sometimes, but I'm sure your readers have seen, let's say, you know, a little bit off topic, but if you pick up a package of cheese and it says Hagola at 212, what is that all about? Some companies cannot get the resicha, hagolo temperature, all the way up to 212. So some of the kashrus agencies allow them to get a scholos resicha at 190. And that's how they work when they kosher between shreif and kosher cheese. Well, not everybody's happy with that. And therefore, the frat in the Chabad community. And therefore, they want people to know that this cheese is taka, hagola temperature the way it's supposed to be, not hascholos at 190. Having said that, in the case of Starbucks, both the three compartment sink and the Hobart, which again is the dishwasher, do not even reach 190. It reaches only 180, and in the Hobart at least, and therefore you have the problem of Chazanish that you cannot say that the soap went into the blia, went into the metal. So the blia of Pegima, of soap, did not enter, according to Chazon Ish, which is the, in addition to that, you also, even like a moldic, you know, the Chazon Ish is relatively, I'll call new, in the last, I don't know, 50 years, besides the fact that, you know, he lived in the last century. But, you know, a moldic or a bonum used to be Saimach on Kabbalah Kach Polte. If you ask the old Rabbanim, but even there,
Rabbaran was Simach on that,
right? It was I'm older.
I think in Lakewood, there's Simach and Rabbaran with the Kabbalah Kaf Palta and Gabi Pesach and many other. Yeah.
Well, certainly in the kashrus agencies, they do not today. By the way, they do follow Rabbaran on another aspect, and that is what's considered Yatzah letters, which is 120. So that much, and in our case, which I'll get to in a minute, about what you can order at Starbucks, which is a little bit of a breakthrough, does follow a barn on this. But I just want to make a point that you don't have Kabbalah Kach Polta here because The ovens are at 450 or 500 degrees. The washing is, I don't know, 130.
I understand that, but but the question is the grease goes into the water first, and then it goes into the metal. So the pagam happens. Let's say if somebody cut a knife, a ham with a knife, right? So the grease would go off the knife, go into the water, then go onto your basket. So the pagam doesn't happen in the walls of the basket. The pagam already happens in the water.
Right.
The grease is spoiled in the water. So at that point, whatever is nivla is already nifgam. So even like the chazanish would be mutta.
No, but there's no soap. There's no soap.
Don't they put a detergent? There's no detergent.
No, that's what I'm telling you. There are four steps. Only one of those steps have pagima, but the other hot steps don't have.
There's nothing at all. It's just plain water.
Right. Plain water or a sanitizer, which we don't consider a pagima.
In other words, the sanitizer has no flavor to it.
Right.
Interesting. So all you would have with bittel, and you're saying the nice and tam bufkam would be tully, and whether you do rabaran's shita or whether you hold like the chazinish.
I'd be careful saying rabaran's shita on that, because you don't have rabaran's shita here, because the heat from the oven is much greater than the. You don't have kabal kach poltai.
No, but you do, because the basket never goes into the oven. So the water that's going into the basket at 180 would come out at 180 too, right?
Right. Oh, from that angle. I have to figure out the numbers on that. It could be. Would Rabaran say that today that it's enough to kosher? Kabal kach poltai was on the kosher angle. Okay, it could be. We could definitely.
So we still have nice and tam. We have Rabaran, and we have the nice and tam in the fact that you may not want the ham in your coffee in the first place.
You may be right about the ham, although I have seen ham flavor coffee. You know, they make these constant ham flavors. But
it's more than just the ham. But it's more than just the ham.
There's a lot more.
But I'm saying in a dirty dishwasher, you're going to have ham and you're going to have cheese and you're going to have, I don't know what they serve, chullant. And I mean, some disgusting concoction of, nobody in their right mind is going to sit and drink a glass full of whatever sewage they have in that sink over there. So even if the ham in itself may not be a nice and tam, certainly the collection of debris they have there would be a nice and tam, no?
But hey, look, now that argument would be doing away with the whole Ramah. You know, why doesn't the Ramah just say that anytime you wash dishes together,
I understand. How would you be moderate then, somebody to drink from the drip coffee?
Well, the brew baskets, as I said, you can make an argument possibly that it's a cliché-y, which, you know, there's what to work with over there. It's possible, as I said, it's a cliché-y. It's only maybe the filter acts as a buffer and takes care of the klipa. So, you know, perhaps the brew basket is a little better than some of the other stuff.
Rabbi Fishbein, another question. The whipped cream at Starbucks, the frappuccinos at Starbucks, let's go into some of the more tertiary items at Starbucks. What do you say about those?
Well, the frappuccino is simply not certified as kosher because it comes from it's made from a base that's made, I believe, overseas, which without a hechsher. So you just simply can't, it doesn't start off as kosher. You know, many of these other items that we're talking about start the ingredients are kosher. They just may get compromised in a Starbucks store. Masha Inking, as I said, the Frappuccino, it starts off as non-certified kosher, coming from who knows where, perhaps China or whatnot.
So can I interrupt you on that? And I'm not knowledgeable about this, but Ramosha has a klal too when he speaks about Chalav Yisrael, Chalav Stam. He says there's a concept of mirsis, that if an organization is worried that they're going to lose their license because of the fact that they are violating law, he says that be'etzem has a din of like there's a mashgiach there. If an organization prints ingredients, and I think according to the FDA, and I'm not an expert, this is what I've been told, if it's more than 1%, they would have to disclose it on the ingredients. Why wouldn't that have a din of mirsis if they look at the ingredients and you say there's nothing in it that's not kosher, according to Ramosha?
Yeah, okay, but I'm not sure I understand your question. Meaning like this, the if, let's say it says in their whey powder or something along those lines. So you don't know what's in the sweetening base. So if the whey powder could either be from a cluster whey or a tray for whey.
Yeah, but let's say, for example, before I did this interview, I spent a little while on their site. So let's say there's a site. It's called Vegetarian Starbucks, and they were mavasa the whole world of Simcha Tzuma, that now there's a whole bunch of their frappuccinos that are vegetarian. This is not a Jewish site at all. Now I could imagine that Starbucks violated this. It would cause the only thing worse than violating the gay sense of right is probably violating a vegetarian sense of right. So would that be something that you would say you could be simach on if you're going to a Starbucks and they say that?
Absolutely not. Not that they'd be lying, but just that we worry about bleas. The hardest thing to do from a kosher standpoint is to take a wet liquid item and make it dry. Frappuccino bases are dried products. They're powders. So now, if you're overseas, the way they do it is they spray dry the product. A spray dryer, again, is you take liquid, you spray dry it, and it becomes a powder, and then you reconstitute it later. And that's where most of the items in a Frappuccino base are powders from spray dryers. And a spray dryer is an extremely complicated, multi-million dollar machine that you buy, and you find ways to regain your capital by renting it out to anybody. And those are called toll dryers or whatnot. And they spray dry meat and cheese and who knows what, tomato products, as well as the products that can be going in. These can be, and just agav, a spray dryer is very karuv to a kli rishon. And therefore, if you don't know what you're doing, if a kosher agency doesn't know what it's doing, there's no way they're really koshering it, because the only way to kosher is through Agola, and you can't do a Liban on these things, and so you're relying on you need to know what you're doing in order to kosher a spray dryer. That's aga. So therefore, the point is that your powders that go into the Frappuccino may just say, something simple like, powdered whey, powdered milk, powdered eggs. Those things, to make it on a kosher spray dryer, especially overseas, are difficult, and many times they're not going to be kosher, and therefore the ingredients might just say something simple, but they are far from simple as far as kosher goes.
Now, so I had a Rav who I asked this to, and he said by a spray dryer, he said, the only problem is going to be the first run. He says, because even if it was belay, let's say your worst case scenario, a guy had a spray dryer that was being used for meat, for soup, and now it's being used for another run. He said a factory run usually runs for a few days, a week. He said, so the first 24-hour run, you could say there's still some bleas. He said, like a week later of the run, could there be bleas because there was something in there a week ago? So how would you respond to this opinion?
Yeah, there's something called shefa and halacha, where b'di'evid, you can make that case.
So I'm just saying, before this, I spoke to a Rav in Philadelphia, an expert on kashrus, and I asked him, how would be the tzad? And he said that halach. He said it would be shefa, it would be a svek sveka by shefa on a drabana. And I'm curious, what would you, that would be, how he would.
Why is it a drabana? I'm not sure why.
Well, he said because the bleas, you know what I mean? It would be nice. It would be nice in tamlefkan, but pashtus. You don't want the meat soup in your way, right? So it would be a nice and tam lefkam. It would be, so that's why it would be a drabanan. So it's a safik drabanan, b'makam she'iyacha levurei. So he said that's how he would be mata the frappuccinos.
Well, again, there's flavors in the frappuccinos. That's as far as maybe what stuff goes on a spray dryer. Maybe you can say shefa. But there's also flavors. Flavors are extremely complicated things that are not bottled because it's a double time, And who knows what's in a flavor? There could be 40, 50 little components that are give a ton. That could be trace from Amish that go into your flavor, and you don't have Bittel or anything like that.
Okay.
The Frappuccinos are really awful.
A problem. What about the whipped cream?
The whipped cream is really... I have found that the whipped creams are generally okay, but you kind of need to know your places. But in other words, certainly like the half and half and the milk, those are kind of regional. But what I've found is that the whipped cream was okay. But I don't want to forget to say this, because one of the most commonly asked questions are the lattes. Just getting a latte, which is made up of steamed milk, or if you mock banachol yisrael, you can get steamed soy milk together with espresso. What I wanted to tell everyone is that I found a way that one can get l'chatchila a latte, even in a regular Starbucks, and that would be to order something called a kitty latte. The kitty latte is, they make these lattes not hot enough so that the kids don't burn themselves. And it's really supposed to be set about 120, but they can manually set the temperature so that you, at whatever you want. So you can say, I want a latte at 115 degrees only. They can set it for you and they can make it for you. And it's like I mentioned before, following Reb Aaron's understanding of what Yahtzeh lettuce is, and therefore there's no shilas. I think it's nice breakthrough.
but you're saying that what would be the latte is made with the wands. The wands, there's no shilas at all. So what would be the shilas because the wands don't go into the dishwasher, do they?
No, they don't.
So what would be the shilas?
The metal cups. The metal cups.
Oh, go into that's the dishwasher. She's saying you can make those. I understand.
Right. That's Mamash Kli Rishon, the way, they make it. So the metal cups are fine, but if you do it under Yahtzeh lettuce, it's 150. And by the way, I've tried it in the last few weeks, making sure that it tasted hot enough for someone that wanted this type of drink. And, I thought it was fine.
So we're coming out with... You're saying that even somebody who's machmir and all dinim could have a soy latte that's made less than Yahtzeh lettuce by, and it'll be lechatchila lechaladeus.
Yes, I'm very excited about this new breakthrough. Very good.
And in fact, even if you hold it bishul akum, there wouldn't be shaila bishul because it's not Yahtzeh lettuce by. Let me ask you one last issue. Many of the kiosks are owned by individuals. Now, let's say you have a kiosk and it's owned by a Yid, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, he's probably not Toivel his Kalim. Now, I don't know, let's say you could get, arguably, I don't know, if you could get a coffee or something in a real container. I don't know if such a Matzias exists in Starbucks where they have glasses. I just don't know. Would you be able to drink in this kiosk knowing that this Yid was not Toivel his glasses?
I don't think that it offers the food for you. Even if it's owned by a Yid, most of the times there's at least a shutfus, a partnership with someone that's not Jewish, and therefore, as far as Sudas Kalem, it certainly helps in that matter. But if it's if you ordered it, you're saying that you for sure know that it's
it's owned. This kiosk is owned by Mr. Friedman, mm-hmm. who is not a Shomer Torah Mitzvah.
This is a very theoretical. I can't imagine I don't know of any case where there is such a case. Theoretically, I don't know if that would oster the food that you just ordered. It's a mitzvah on him to do, and maybe he may not be able to drink it, but you that ordered it, I don't believe that it osters the food for you.
Well, Rabbi Fishbein, this was really wonderful, and very nageya. And but the takeaway is you're saying is that the Americano is certainly much easier. The if you want to go with the brood basket, you have who to be Saimachan. The Frappuccinos, however, you say
you're saying that.
No, I said you're saying you said that. I don't want to put any words in your mouth. Would you? Can you be makel by a brew basket? I don't want to pass myself words. Could you be makel by a fruit basket? I ask you that. Then let me go backwards.
Well, you can make an argument to say it. I wouldn't recommend it though. I would recommend that you get something without a Shiloh. That's the Americano. You can even now get a latte. Under Yatzaletis, why get something with a Shiloh if you can get it without a Shiloh?
And the Frappuccinos, you say certainly you cannot be mate because you just don't know what's in it. It's a right. Closed bag.
And do not confuse that with the Frappuccino bottled drink that they sell at Starbucks. That's made locally, meaning in America. It's made under Hashkacha using a completely different. It has a K on it, but it's Rabbi Charlap. It's a reliable Ashgacha, and it is not the same Frappuccino base used in the Frappuccino behind-the-counter stuff.
Which comes from overseas.
Yes.
This was most educational. Thank you very, very much. And as somebody who's used your Hashirim for many years, I want to thank you not only on behalf of the listeners, but on behalf of my family as well. Thank you very much,
okay,
Rabbi Fishbein.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joining us from New Jersey is Rabbi Eli Gersten. Rabbi Gersten has been on this program many times. He's the rabbinic coordinator at the OU. Welcome, Rabbi Eli.
Thank you so much.
Rabbi Eli, I want to talk about going to a 7-Eleven and getting a coffee.
Okay. We discussed this question with Belsky Zatzal many times. Also with Rabbi Chaim Teuben with Sasha Sechter. They both have the opinion that you could get a coffee at a 7-Eleven type store, like a convenience store. It's known how they just have machines right there to prepare the coffee. It's not an issue with dishwashers and things. They just rinse it out and put it back. These things usually open 24 hours. They're just constantly making new coffee. And as long as you just buy a regular, black coffee, not a flavor. If you're getting the flavors, then those need hashgacha. Just the regular, regular roasted coffee is always considered kosher. Nothing done to the beans except for the roasting of them. It's fine. And, if you're going to add anything else, you add milk, you add cream, then you have to, of course, know that those are kosher too.
So here's the question. You have a 7-Eleven, so they have a kettle, like a carafe. They have a basket, plastic or metal basket. They have a sink. And they also have, they serve tray for food too. You can go to a 7-Eleven and eat. Yeah, all kinds of traces are things. So somebody goes to a 7-Eleven, and the carafe is in the sink, and the basket is in the sink, and they're also washing out the, some type of a pot where they have trays of soup. They have shrimp bisque. So the shrimp bisque lands into your carafe. They wash it out. They make sure it's clean. They put in soap, et cetera, and they put it back in. Lamaisa, your carafe could have had shrimp bisque in it, or your container. Why wouldn't that, or your basket, why wouldn't that be any type of a problem? Would that be a problem? Wouldn't that be a problem? That's how
right.
I would.
So generally, it's the way that it's not like that. Immersing it into the sinks like that. They're just rinsing it out and putting it back. If you would, then you have the questions of, soap, and is it secretiony, the sink, and how hot is the water, and is the shrimp, whatever it is it, nice and Thomas Gam, because it's not improving the taste of the coffee. They have all those other sorters to, we'll call it as backups over here as well. But the assumption is that you're not relying on that. You're relying on the fact that the coffee is fine. It wasn't washed together with anything not kosher. There's no reason to assume that it was.
Now, what would you say, somebody's invited, assume that Paiskim Hall, you can go, you can have a coffee in a tray for restaurant. No, not have a coffee, you could sit down in a tray for restaurant, and there's no Shiloh Marasayan, et cetera, whatever the asterisk, whatever the conditions may be. And now you're there, and the guy's ordering them. You say, look, I'm kosher, I'm sorry. Can I have a coffee? I'll have a coffee. Can you or can't you?
Right. So there's a few problems over here. One is they're going to serve it to you in a mug, in a coffee cup in a restaurant. So those cups, of course, are not kosher. They go through the dishwashers. you're soon to be non-kosher as well. Anytime you also are ordering something, asking something to be prepared, be poured into this cup for me. So I'm not allowed to do that either. There's an issur of asking a non-Jew to cook for you in his non-kosher kalim, and that includes having it poured into the mug. Even if you were to say stam kalim in yomo, which is very questionable whether you could even use that heter in a restaurant. As you know, the way restaurants work, they use all their kalim every day, and everything gets washed multiple times a day in the dishwashers. You know, so pashas is you have to review everything in the restaurant as being trace. We know that what goes into those, what gets washed together in those, you know. And also, even if the kli is an ein ben yomo, even if you were to say, well, I've sort of clueless about this, you know, reasons to suspect that, or it's nashi tamas gam, or other reasons, you're not allowed to be guarding that. You can't even ask a non-Jew to prepare it for you. Many are not aware of that. Because learned earlier siman of Shulchan Aruch, they don't get to siman Kuf Chaf Beis, where there brings this issur. It's also to ask a non-Jew to cook for you in Ein Ben Yom Kalim is an issur. But even though there's no Bishul Akum, you can't. This has nothing to do with Bishul Akum. This has to do with Bliyas of issur and Kalim, and even Tam Pugum, you're not allowed to ask a guy to be Mevatel Tam Pugum for you in order that you can drink this coffee. Even though you're not interested in the Tam Pugum, you're not interested in the off taste that goes into it. Obviously, it makes things worse. But anytime you're asking a non-Jew to prepare you a food, the kli has to be kosher first.
So let's talk about that for a minute, okay? The cup is coming out of a dishwasher, right? The dishwasher was washed with detergent, which is clearly nice and tamlus gam, and it makes that anything that's traced that would try to get attach itself to this kli, to give bleas to this kli, would be pugum. Why would that be a problem?
Okay, so the soap itself, of course, is pugum, and whatever would be together with that soap would not be a problem. But the dishwashers themselves have many cycles to them. Not everything that goes into a dishwasher is kashered or becomes pugum, do we assume became pugum through the dishwasher. For example, the china plates, okay? So let's say they fill up the dishwasher with mugs and plates, which are all cheres. None of them could be kashered in the dishwasher. As we know, cheres, there's no way to do hagala on it. There's no way to kasher it. So all these things are all, they're all traced. And they go through the dishwasher. The initial cycle has soap. Okay. First initial cycle. But then at the end, there's going to be a final rinse, which washes away all that soap. And that final rinse is going to be just plain water. It's going to be hot water, and it's going to be cooking together all the different plates in that dishwasher. We have no way of assuming, no right to assume, that everything in the dishwasher was pugum. It was all used, you know, all types of, and even though it had soap in an earlier cycle, we don't have a right to say that just because I put soap in, you could say when the soap is in there, that water, that soapy water is traced. But afterwards, when it's all washed away, now you have all the plates washing together, that will make everything trace.
So, Rabbi, let me explain Rabbi Gerstein's here. Rabbi Gerstein is if you have soapy water, it's pugum, and nothing that goes through that water could make anything else trace because the time becomes pugum. But now that the soapy water is gone, it's clean, now it's in its final cycle, the trace of kalim could have bleas that are not pugum. And when those bleas that are not pugum come out, they could then go into the cups, which you want to then use, and be pugum those cups. And you're basing obviously on chazanish, right? But here's the question that I would ask, okay? The chazanish, the way I read the Chazanish is saying, if you have hot water that let's say something that's yadse ledes bay that creates something that's traced, the only way to get it out is through hagala. So now that you're putting in new water that's pygim, maybe it's pygimit, but it's not pygimit enough. The raya is you still need hagala, and therefore because of that suffix, he says it would be asa. Because his raya is from Hagala. But my question would be, is here the second rinse is not at a greater temperature than the first rinse. And still, we have a klal. Whatever the first rinse, this kli was bailea, that was pogum at that temperature. At that, anything that comes out at that temperature is going to be nifkam the tam. So even according to the Chazanish, it should be mutter.
No, first of all, when we deal with klicheres, we don't say any hagala. We don't say kabbalah kafal. Sorry,
I understand that, but my point is the pigima goes in at that temperature. So everything that would come out at that temperature was already nifgam.
Not necessarily, not like the Teres. We don't know how much of it absorbs in and how much of it is coming out when I do a Hagalah on the Kli Teres. Maybe the Kli Teres was already what we call Shavu Mavoyah. It was already fully absorbed. It absorbed more. Maybe it did. We don't know. When I cook something a second time, I can't say from the Kli Teres, it got out everything for the first time and only went in now I for sure absorbed into the Teres the soap. We have no way of making determination.
So let's go to Starbucks. I want to extend this. You go to Starbucks. Can you have a coffee there?
Okay. So I actually was, I was present when the different Kashrut agency once came to discuss with Rubelsky the Shiloh of Starbucks. I was a fly on the wall. One of the things that he was describing that he goes on to Starbucks and what Rubelsky said. He said you should tell people. They should go to stores that have, they shouldn't buy things at Starbucks because there's trace things there too. And not everything there is kosher. And it's bad chinuch to advise somebody to go to a store where some of the drinks are kosher and some of them are a tray and to give them, everyone has to be a mashkiach when they walk into a store and start figuring out what can I buy and what can I not buy. Obviously, that's what about the sandwiches and things like that, which are kosher. That's not, you have that same issue with the 7-Eleven too, and Rafi was not concerned about that. But they have to start being, figuring out, well, how is this drink made? And they make all these complicated drinks, and some of them have, are steamed, and some of them are, just plain hot water, just plain, I think some of them, some of the hashkachas started making lists that people should be aware, because of this issue that Rubelsky raised, that how are people supposed to really know what they're supposed to do when they walk into Starbucks? And maybe that alleviated the issue, maybe it confuses people even more, I don't know. But, there's some logic to saying, the concern that Rubelsky had was that people don't know what to do, so let's educate them. On the other hand, a lot of people are still not educated. They don't read all these things. They just know, my friend goes in, he buys at Starbucks, I can do the same, not knowing what you can and cannot do. And it's very complicated. I'd make the comment like this. I'd say, if you want to know alpi halacha what the Ikar Adin is, and I'm not interested in Rubelsky's chumras, so then...
Let me just interrupt a bit, really respectfully. I think that this is how I would frame the question, okay? I would think that Ikar Adin, if you have a cold plate and somebody puts a piece of pork on it, like some nice deli from pork, you could wash off the plate and then have a piece of gefilte fish on that plate if it was cold. Would you agree with that? Is that correct?
If it was greasy, maybe. Shif-shif, whatever. Okay, yeah, but if it's also...
You washed it off, you clean, you just dose it. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So theoretically, you could have a piece of pork on your plate and then eat. Now, I would assume that most of the Yiddish balabusters or the people listening would not in their kitchen plates put pork and then serve shalosh shittos, right? And the answer is because we're machmir, like Rabbi Belsky we spoke about, said even soap has to be. You should try to use kosher soap, even though halachically. But the question is, people on the other hand have to travel. People, on the other hand, have to have business meetings. I mean, if you're a Koy Kodesh and you don't have it, Tavi Alecha Bracha if you can. But if the Jew in this world has to live and has to be Mekadosh Olam Hazeh, and therefore it takes him to places where he can't go into places that have, you could drink almond milk, but you don't have to drink Chalav Stam. So the best thing is a Vada who wants to go into a place where in the same dishwasher they could have washed Treif or Kalim, even though Ramosha holds you could have the same dishwasher, first use it for Milchik, the next one use of Faishi. Nobody I know does that, right?
Right.
So Avada in our homes were Machna. The question is when people have to travel, or people have to go to business meetings, etc., then we want to say, watch the Chumra and watch the Halacha, because in this case,
right.
I want to know watch the Halacha. And now, there may be people who will say, and again, Tavi Alei and Bracha, they said, look, even when I travel, even when that is, I'm Machted on the Chumras, I don't want to know the Ikar Adin, I want to know. And that's rather wonderful. But if somebody says, listen, I have business meetings all the time, I have to take somebody someplace, so I don't want to go into a Treif restaurant, is the Starbucks better? And if it's better, could I offer a coffee? So that's why I would like to know. Again, if you hold that would be allowable, then can you drink the coffee in Starbucks? That's all I'm framing the question.
My understanding for Rubelsky was, if you're going to buy just the plain black coffee at Starbucks, it's basically the exact same thing as buying a black coffee at a at a 7-Eleven type store.
But how could it, how does he know they're not washing the carats and everything in the dishwasher?
Okay, so we did some research about Starbucks. You'll talk to Rabbi Fishbane.
Yeah, we have Rabbi Fishbane on next. Yeah,
but he did a lot more research about it than I did. But we did. We spoke to I went with one of the other people at the OU who actually deals with Starbucks. We don't certify any of the stores, but we certify the coffee. You know, it's certified OU, so we made a meeting. If he threw his contacts, he was able to get us a very high-level meeting. And he discussed with us what goes on in the stores. He actually met at a Starbucks, and he's a manager, not a manager, he's a, whatever it is. He's in charge of, he's a corporate, honcho. He's in charge of whatever it is, a few hundred stores in New York. And they all follow, he says they all have to follow the same protocols. All Starbucks is part of their mandate is to be exactly the same. There are actually different types of Starbucks. There's the kiosk type and the store type. But if you're a store type, they're all supposed to be exactly drinks, same, made the same way, same everything. All types of rules of cleanliness. And anyway, so we went there, we discussed with them, what are the issues with the coffee, with the black, plain black coffee? And the only issue that could be is there's a brew basket, and the brew basket, so we're dealing with coffee, we're dealing with Irui, okay? It's hot water going over the beans, coming down, dripping through into a container. In the Irui, that it goes over that this basket that holds the beans, that basket can potentially be washed together with non-kosher.
Right.
That is the issue. You said that it could happen, can't happen, whatever, but let's just assume it could happen even. Even still, it's just an Irui, and we know that the rule is Irui is a klipa, it won't make the coffee trace. To ask the non-Jew to make it for you again, like you said before, would not be allowed. But when you walk into a Starbucks, all the brewed coffee is already made. They're not making it for you after you walk in, as opposed to a lot of the specialty drinks, they make it to order. You tell them if you want a beans, latte, whatever these things are, they will then take the cup, they have a metal cup, and they put the drink in it, and then they put it under the steam wand, and they prepare it for you right there on the spot. In which case, if that cup, even if you knew that it was Eina Ben Yomo, again, even if you knew it was Pogum.
Oh, it's a paper cup. It's going to be a paper cup.
No, there's a metal cup they first take to prepare the drink for you in.
Oh, I understand.
Okay, and that goes under the steam wand, and then they mix it, and then they pour it to you into your paper cup. But that preparation is taking place now in a cup that goes into the dishwasher. That's a klirishin. First of all, it's under the steam. It's in the dishwasher, which can have a din of a klirishin to it. These have heaters in them and everything. They go in there with all types of trace things Starbucks has that go into the same dishwasher. And even if that kli is pugum, and even if that kli is you're asking the guy to prepare you a drink. And that itself is a problem. So even if you have it after the fact, you'll say it's mutter to drink it, you weren't allowed.
But it's only a problem if there's something traced there. If the cup is nifka and it's pugum, there's no problem in asking the guy to do it.
If the cup never became traced in its whole history, then it wouldn't be a problem.
Or right now it's not traced.
No, if it's one of us was kasher. If it wasn't kasher, then it stays tray forever. And Eina Ben Yomo doesn't help you. Because you're not allowed to ask a guy to cook for you in an Eina Ben Yomo.
So if this cup was always, its only way that it became tray was through Pegima, then it wouldn't be a problem asking the guy.
If you knew that for a fact.
So it's a suffix, right?
No, I think it's a suffix. When you have a non-kosher restaurant, everything in the restaurant is the cheskas tray. We don't say it's a suffix.
I don't mean that. This is never used for tray. The only time it would come into contact with trace is in a dishwasher where it's nifgam.
Things like that.
Right.
So it is pogum when the soap is in there, and it's not pogum when the soap is out.
Okay. So I want to talk about the Chazanish. Let's talk for a minute, okay? We don't know, and the Chazanish himself says it's a Torah suffix. He doesn't know whether he brings a raya, but he said I don't know whether he says it's a Torah suffix whether this thing would be Baileya, once it's Nifgam, are there Bliyas that are not Nifgam? I have a Raya, I have a very simple Raya to how to do this. Everybody knows, you're the expert on this, is it Simon, it would be Simon Tzadikhes, I think? I'm guessing Tzadikhes, right? And I'll just explain it for Ilam. The Gemara in Chulin, I think is it Tzadik Zayin? The Gemara says that if you're not sure whether something is Treif or not, You're not sure whether there's shishim or not. What do? You bring a goyish cook, Mark calls it a kfela, to come and taste the food. If he tastes the food and he says, look, I don't taste any milchiks in your mitzu, or alternatively, I don't taste any meat in your milk in your milchiks soup, then it's kasha. Then it would be good. So the Shulchan Aruch does a machlokes. The Rama says, the Beis Yosef says with Saimachana Gaisha Kfela. And the Rama says, we are not Saimachana Gaisha Kfela, you need shishim. Right? And there's various other opinions in this, but these are the two core accepted opinions, right? Which is why the Sfardim can use a Gaisha cook. And according to Rama, the Ashkenazim do not use a Gaisha chef. And there's a Shaila what the Rama says, but the Shach says, I believe, because we're assuming the guy may be lying. Maybe he wants a favor from you or something like that, right? If it weren't for that case, Yitzhakah would be able to. In fact, there's a famous case in Yerushalayim. The Teplik Rav moved to Yerushalayim. He was a big Goyin in Poland in his older years. And he moved to Yerushalayim, and there was a chasana in the old city, and something milchik, a cup of milk, fell into a soup by a chasana. And they went to Reb Shmuel Salant, and he didn't know what to do. He said, I don't know, Chavetz Chais, I don't know what to tell you. So they said, send the Shaila to the Teplik Rav. So they went to the Teplik Rav, and the Teplik Rav said, this is what you should do. Bring an Arab, ask him to taste the soup. If he says, I don't taste the milk in it, Ashkenazim can't be Sinuch on it. Bring a Sfardi, who can't be Sinuch it, let him taste the soup. If he agrees that he doesn't taste it, the Ashkenazi could be Sinuch on the Sfardi. And that's how he was mat the soup. Okay, that's a... Okay, that was the famous. Okay, so here's my Shiloh. Starbucks does not want that when you order a cup of coffee, you should taste shrimp in it, or whatever tarifs they have in it. I think Cooley Alma Marja, they would be horrified. When you have a coffee, a black coffee, you don't want to have a flavored coffee maybe, but it includes it, right? So here the guy is telling you, we have exact systems that with it's spick and span, there's not going to be any flavors crossing, we don't want the corn bisque ending up in this. So you have here mamish akfela with alech chumris, right? That even the Rama would be made, that according to, if the Rama holds it's because of shash, that in this case you could be Simach and the guy. So if you don't want to be Simach and the Sfar, bring a Sfar, you let him do it. And he says, yes, I see that all Starbucks thinks it is the way they want it, that it should be sterile and clean and good. So you have here mamish, the most simple Sfar to say that they don't want their coffee to have shrimp in it or whatever, or pork or whatever it is. That's their best interest. I even asked the Sfardi to taste it. Their systems are identical, you said a few minutes ago, in all their restaurants. Why can't you use that as much of a common sense and a halachic way to say that even the Chazanish Yisafik was nifshat? In this case, you don't have a lot to worry about.
Yes, there's two problems with this idea. First of all, just in a practical case, it will only help you for that particular day. So I walk in and I buy a coffee and I give it to the guy and he tastes it and give it to the Sfardi and he tastes it, and then I could drink the coffee.
Okay. Respectfully, Rabbi Gerst, I'm not sure I agree with that. Because this that you have to give it to a kfela is a case. A lady, something fell in. She brings in a guy, she says, look, I was cooking and this is what happened. When you have an automated system, like you said, every single one has the same exact thing. There's three sinks. First you put it in the sink with the stringency, then you put it in the sink with the other stringency, then you put it in the sink with the water. If you don't do it that way, they fire you. So one time, you'll do a kfela 100 times, you're going to get the same result every single time.
No, that's not true. And also we say that I could cook in the same pot 99 times, and maybe in 100 times, now the bleed came out. It didn't come out the first 99 times.
But not by kfela, you don't have such a sorrow.
I'm simply, how do I know unless they take this?
Because there's a system, there's a program, there's an exact
I cooked 99
program.
Pots already. I cooked 99 soups in this pot, in the chafer pot. And I gave it to 99 kvelas to taste. No one ever tastes anything. Can I drink the 100th time without giving it to a kvela?
Yes.
I says no.
I don't. Where does that say?
We know the answer is no.
I don't. Bring me a raya, Adarabba.
No, that's kosher.
Okay. If you hello, if you send me the raya, I will edit on post this up. You bring okay. Bring me the car for that.
Okay. No problem.
Okay. Continue.
The other part. So that's first of all just the practical. How many this part? Second of all, it doesn't address the other issue. I can't ask the non-Jew, even if it's pogum, even if it's yaman, even though I know he's not going to taste anything in it. Whatever he tastes, he's not going to taste anything in the yaman pot. I still can't ask him to cook in it.
Now, that's you asking to cook. That's a different thing. You're coming in, everything's cooked already. right? Yeah, when you come
well,
into
if I'm getting the black coffee that's already cooked already, I don't think it's
well, well, anything the cold, anything that's already cooked, you don't have a shiloh. That's the first thing, right? But I'm saying more to that. I'm saying the kseila bevises I'm saying the kseila will show that their systems are such that it's nisgam and it never became trace.
Right, or you could say...
So you should even ask, right. Should even be asked the guy to be able to say it.
And I hear this, it's only you really in both of Shishim, and I have 100 reasons why we can not do it. We not to fail. I don't have to get to be, to, you know, to inconvenience someone to come in. I can be not through without that. But I still can't ask them to provide it for me, to prepare it for me. If it's already prepared, then you can say it's already been given. That's this is a shout to it. That's called the Vatalis of Hasila, to go to buy something that's already bottled. I know it was a Liger Bittle. Is that called a Vatalis of Hasila? That's also a discussion, but a lot of them are makel on that. Once the guy already made it, you're allowed to buy it from him. Certainly by any of the Yomites, they rely on that, and even some are relying it even by where the Zisser mixed into something, as long as you know it's bottled. But to ask him to do, which is a lot of the drinks there, the fancier drinks, that's what people go to Starbucks for. They want the, you know, they want these ones that they prepare right there for you. It wouldn't be
so, but I'm telling you, if we would do through a kseila, say everything's nifgam, so you would say sure. The kseila never became nesar in the first place.
You don't know that. Don't
well, know. That's what a kseila would tell you.
No, he would tell you now it's pogum. How is he going to tell you it never was there with shas? He can't tell you that.
Because if it was, that means there would have been drinks at some point that had other flavors in them. You would order a coffee and it would have a different flavor in it.
Maybe gave an off taste into it. Maybe you didn't notice it because it was bottled. It was Thomas Gam. You still can't.
No, so either of them, if it's Tamil Scam, then it's not a problem.
No, now it's Tamil Scam. I can't, let's say there has only a very small blea of this there in there. I'll never taste it. You still can't use it. You have to cash it.
But I'm telling you, isn't the svara that Starbucks does not want you, it would have to be tasteable. It would have to be tasteable. So their cleaning systems are such is that they don't want the coffee tasting of some other ingredient. And therefore, it's all their kalim I never have bleas that have a different flavor that they would give out in the cup.
I understand what they want, but what they're doing is the same as every other company. They're not doing anything special. And, yeah, nobody wants to have off-taste in their drinks. But yet, Chazal say, if you do the XYZ, you cook things a certain way, you wash things a certain way, you have to be chashish for the bleas. I know guys don't think there's bugs in their vegetables either. Guys don't think a lot of things. But we know that there are. Doesn't mean, you know, you say, well, with the Waldorf Astoria, would they serve bugs in their vegetables? Of course not. Can you assume, of course, they would ever do that to you? Well, guess what, you know?
I understand, but I think that they would argue that what we consider bugs, they don't consider bugs. So, but on the other hand,
we don't consider,
but on the other hand, the flavor, I understand the flavor has to something that has to be tasteable and discernible. For otherwise, a sailor wouldn't say it's mutter, right? Rabbi, girls, let me ask you another question. Slurpees in 7-Eleven, would you allow your kids to buy them?
I do.
Now, what about the diet Slurpees have a milk ingredient? One of the sweet...
My children don't buy the diet, but you want to know about using the same machine. Maybe it previously had a diet in there that has dairy ingredients in it. So there's no coverage on these machines. It's all cold. Even if they put the next ingredient, you know, they
but if it's wouldn't 24 hours give it a dinner coverage?
I don't think these things sit in there for more than a few hours. These I always see, they're always constantly. The way it works is whenever you take a drink out of the machine, it refills. It's there's a box in the other room that has the syrup in it, and the syrup gets drawn into the machine, and I guess it gets metered in with the right amount of water. And then it's constantly, you know, making new Slurpees. You know, you see it says it gets down to a certain level, and then it adds more, and then it, the red light goes on. You can't take until it finishes doing whatever it does, freezing it again. I don't think there's any concern of coverage on the machine. The machines are constantly turning, they're constantly moving.
Okay.
They, yeah.
Rabbi Gerstin, it's always an honor to have you with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Helpful, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay.